Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Ted Kemp. Thanks for being with us, Ted.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It's good to be with you.
Ted, could you tell our listeners how you got involved in this project in the first place?
Yeah, sure. It's actually, it came about in a sort of roundabout way. In 2014, I was, I don't know if you guys remember, but piracy on the around the coast of Somalia had become a big issue in that early part of that decade. And I came across some research which indicated that actually, I'm talking about maritime piracy here. The piracy was actually declining in that part of the world, but had spiked in Southeast Asia, which was a story that nobody was covering, which I found interesting. And so I got my boss at the time to agree to send me on assignment to Southeast Asia, to Singapore specifically, so that I could do a digital feature. Like it was a big, you know, multimedia kind of digital story about the state of piracy in Southeast Asia. So I was doing a number of interviews for that over the course of reporting it out. And I spoke to a British sea captain who I don't even think we were on camera. We were just talking there. And I said, so, you know, who are these guys? Who are these pirates? And he explained to me, he said, well, they're mostly from Indonesia and they're former fishermen. They're former small scale fishermen from coastal villages. And I said, that's interesting. So they're just like looking for an increase in income, I guess. And he was like, no, it's not exactly about that. It's that their local fishing stocks are being wiped out. That these very large commercial fishing operations, which come through using very big ships, using very advanced gear, basically scoop up the whole ocean. So they're wiping out these guys' stocks. So I thought that was interesting, and it wasn't really within the purview of what I was covering at the time. I was mostly covering, I was covering piracy, but I decided, you know, stick a pin in that because that's interesting. So 2 years later, I showed back up in Southeast Asia, and this time with a TV documentary crew to investigate that issue.
Yeah, and I think you, at least in Oceans of Crime, it started with your venture to Thailand. And sort of what was your initial experience when you got there and sort of learning about the seafood industry?
Well, you know, before we showed up, of course, obviously we've done a whole lot of advanced research. When you're on a TV assignment like that, you're trying to make the most efficient use of your time. So we wanted to know exactly what we should talk about, what we should ask about. The first thing that we discovered that was shocking was the extent to which slavery was playing a role in the fishing industry in that part of the world. And by slavery, I mean literally that. I mean, men, mostly from inland villages in various poorer countries in Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, Burma, were being lured to cities, larger cities, and in some instances, Bangkok and Thailand, these wealthier cities, coastal cities, with promises of jobs, promises of work, and then they were finding themselves forced on board vessels and then taken out to sea. And obviously, once you're out at sea, you can't escape. And so the elements within the industry had been exploiting slave labor, and in some instances were going as far as committing murder at sea to keep these men in line and keeping them on boats for years at a time as well. Now, this problem had been a lot worse prior to 2016, but it was still going on. The industry in Thailand in particular had begun to crack down, or at least begin to show an effort to control the problem. They had implemented a number of rules. The ships had to come into port with a certain greater frequency. You couldn't be out at sea just offloading your catch onto mother ships for years at a time, which had been the norm, which had been the MO of many operations prior to that. And so they were doing this to sort of keep an eye on these crews. And so it was still going on, but it wasn't going on as bad as it had. That said, we were able to locate a number of former slaves and interview them in Burma. And we came away from it with a lot of, with a great deal of confidence that it was still a problem that was occurring. And I should mention too, that the reason that Thailand had clamped down in the first place was because the European Union had threatened to block all Thai seafood imports.
Yeah.
And so it was that threat, that economic threat, that that got the Thai government.
Yeah, well, you know, you in the documentary, there was some obviously some very sad stories, and one that struck a chord with me was the interview with the gentleman who had been shackled to the boat. So anytime they came to port, he couldn't even try to get out if he wanted to. He was shackled there, and there was threats of physical violence and people being hit in the head with the pipe. And when you think about the U.S. was bringing in, you know, more than 1.5 billion worth of seafood every year, and then if the slave labor force was at 20%, you know, this is a story that's common for so many people, sadly.
You know, that's, you just pointed to another number that I was not aware of, and which I actually found quite shocking, which was that the United States imports 90% of its seafood. The United States has a large and robust fishing fleet on both coasts and the Gulf of Mexico and around the coast of Alaska in particular. So to me, it was really surprising that such a large percentage of the catch, if you will, that was being consumed in the United States was not being caught by U.S. vessels. It had not always been that way, obviously, but in an era of globalism, you will often find it to be more economically advantageous if you're operating a fleet off the coast of the Aleutian Islands, for example, to rather than sell that domestically, there might be a great advantage to selling that product elsewhere in Japan or in China or even in Europe. And so it just had sort of, that's what globalism is, right? I mean, the interconnectedness that goes on increasingly, what it means is that more often as producers of various products become specialized in what they do, the more and more specialized they get, and more efficient they get, the more and more that they're not actually serving the country that they're within so much as they're serving an export market where there's more money. And so that was something that surprised me.
Right.
And above,
I'm sure that most Americans have no idea that what's going on in these fisheries industries. Most people just go to the store and buy their fish and assume that it's from a U.S. vessel, and the people are treated at least decently.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that the United States actually does a pretty good job of policing its fisheries, all things considered, and certainly relative to much of the world. And if you are a U.S.-based shopper, if you're an American, you're at the grocery store, or if you go to a restaurant, if it's U.S. caught seafood, if it's something that's coming from Alaska, chances are it's on the up and up. It's at least it's not illegal. However, most of the, you know, so much of the U.S. catch is actually going to other countries, and so much of the what's consumed in the U.S. is coming from Asia, or especially from Asia, but also from Europe and South America.
Well, you know, the FDA only inspects about 2% of the imported seafood, so many people think that seafood is health food, but they're missing the boat, so to speak.
Yeah, we interviewed in the documentary, as you might recall, we interviewed a number of agents from NOAA who, you know, these are dedicated guys and they're doing their best at their job, but they are severely underfunded. And the ability of a small number of agents spread across Hawaii and Alaska and both coasts and the Gulf Coast to be able to monitor all those imports, it's not nowhere near possible.
Yeah, and that's, they're looking for the illegality, NOAA is, and the FDA is looking at that 2% for health reasons, but, seafood is not a safe food.
The NOAA agents, another thing that they run into is it's exceedingly difficult to know if something is caught illegally. You can't know with any given catch, no matter where it comes from, that it was caught using, internationally mandated methods, whether it was not stolen from one country's exclusive waters, which is another problem. So that's actually a growing problem, particularly here in Asia, where you have, for example, China has a huge fishing fleet, and increasingly, there was a report in the New York Times, actually, I think it was just last month, about about China's fishing fleet actually entering Indonesia's proprietary waters with military escorts and running off the Asian vessels using threat of military force and then allowing their own fishing vessels to then scoop up the catch within Indonesia's waters. Also in April, a Chinese vessel sank a Vietnamese fishing boat. And these fishing boats that are operating from Malaysia and from Vietnam and from the Philippines and from Indonesia, these are mostly, these are, for lack of a better way of putting it, these are mom and pop shops. These are fishing villages. In many cases, they've existed, for thousands of years, surviving this same way, and they have a very difficult time competing with. They had a hard time competing with the big commercial operators. Period. But when you put a military backing behind that, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I thought one of the fascinating pieces in the documentary was how when you followed a vessel from Sea Shepherd, which many people have seen on Animal Planet's Whale Wars, and they spent, and I guess maybe we can talk a little bit about how they work with, I think it was True Sky, the name of the company that monitors boats all over the world.
Sky Truth, which of all places is based in the mountains of West Virginia. They managed to work together and found each other online almost by accident, the two different organizations. And then managed to work together in real time to actually pull off a chase of a rogue Chinese fleet, which was about seven vessels, large vessels, that was operating in the South Indian Ocean. And Sea Shepherd actually deployed and gave chase and scared off these fishing vessels, which dropped their trawling lines. These trawling lines, according to Sea Shepherd, and as documented by Sea Shepherd, were illegal gear. We're talking about trawling nets that are miles long, and which, when cut loose, end up just rolling through the ocean, destroying reefs, picking up everything. And that's exactly what these guys did to get away, was that they cut those lines loose, and leaving the Sea Shepherd folks to sort of gather evidence, if you will, by going through those lines, and then later to start to track them down again until that fleet, as the documentary shows, eventually escaped all the way back through the South China Sea back up to China.
A lot of people are concerned about plastic pollution in the ocean, giving up plastic straws. But the truth is that discarded fish nets and fishing gear make up over half of the plastic pollution in the ocean.
That's a great point. And that, again, is something, the idea of these loose nets, that's not something that I was aware of, again, until we started reporting this documentary. I was on the beach in Scotland, the Isle of Skye, I was just on holiday. This was in late 2016. And I came across this massive, my wife and I were strolling along the beach, and we came across this massive, you could see netting gear, like scraps of net, scraps of the floats that they put on nets, that had just washed up on this remote beach in Scotland. And it gives you an idea of the severity of the problem. What people don't understand is that the oceans in general are largely unpoliced. And this goes for everything. It goes beyond fishing. It goes into smuggling and into illegal dumping and everything else. There is no international authority, at least not one that has any sort of enforcement power, in non-territorial waters. And that's why you are able to see things like slavery taking place, because they're sort of the last lawless place on earth. There groups like Seaford are attempting to try to bring technology into the game and monitor vessels using satellites and transponder technology, which is supposed to be on all vessels. But the problem is that ships can turn it off. Ships can turn off those transponders, as Sea Shepherd documented in the case with that Chinese fleet. In fact, the only reason that they even kept caught up with that fleet is because one of the vessels of the seven had apparently accidentally left their transponder on.
Right. And so basically, anytime if if with all the difficulties in tracking where the fish came from, you know, with especially with any bite of, you know, from a tuna fish sandwich, you know, may have impacted the lives of hundreds of thousands of seals and dolphins and swordfish and so many others. And I think, you know, we only have a couple minutes here left, but I thought maybe real quick too, we sort of also think in the US that everything is fine when it comes to ORE process. And it seems like in Hawaii, they found a legal loophole to still capitalize on foreign workers and get food produced or brought in for cheap, you know, paying workers $1 an hour for tuna that can sell for $50 a pound or what have you. But I was surprised to learn about this going on sort of in our own backyard.
Yeah, to be clear, we're not talking about slavery, but we are talking about migrant labor at sea. And so these are the Hawaiian fleet we found, thanks to a legal loophole, which was actually introduced by a senator from Hawaii, a U.S. senator, is actually Daniel Inouye, was making it possible for American vessels to operate using foreign crews. And these crews are typically from Vietnam and the Philippines. And these workers are making much more money than they would make in their own country doing the same work, but they're not making anywhere near what a U.S.-based crewman would be able to demand. And so these guys are not allowed to, we found at the time, and which it was definitely the case at the time, and is likely still the case now, was that these individuals are not allowed to enter the United States. They can walk around on the docks and the area around the port, but they are essentially constrained to those vessels most of the time. And life at sea is not easy, and it is not neat, it's not clean. And these guys lived in difficult conditions despite being based upon making a living upon U.S. flagged vessels with U.S. captains.
I thought there was a fascinating interview there. I think it was with a gentleman who owned several tuna boats, and he was sort of saying, well, you know, if there's any problems here, they can easily pick up a phone and call an attorney and file their grievance that way. And I just thought it was so foolish and naive and perhaps purposely of him to say that people are going to willingly call up and try and report some abuse or something wrong in the process when their families back home are relying on them to be able to bring in this money every day.
The state of affairs that was conveyed to us by the owners and operators of these vessels, we interviewed two of them, was very much at odds with what we were hearing from the actual crews themselves. We boarded some of the vessels. We just went down to the docks and just boarded some of these vessels and found that they didn't know who the real names of the ship's owners. It's awfully difficult to file a complaint against a party who you cannot identify, of course. And there were all sorts of discrepancies between the two sets of people and the way they described the situation.
To see the documentary we've been talking with Ted about, you can go to YouTube and do a search for Oceans of Crime. Ted, would you like to add anything about how our listeners might learn more about the situation?
You know, there are a number of really good resources out there. We spoke with the ISRA Institute, which investigates and tries to combat slavery in Southeast Asia. Human Rights Watch does the same. And there are obviously all these organizations are online. They're quite good at documenting the evidence that they uncover. And I would encourage people to look into it on their own.
We've been talking with Ted Kemp on the fascinating documentary, Oceans of Crime. Thanks for being with us, Ted, and bringing attention to this really important issue that's affecting thousands of people around the world and their livelihoods, and also bringing attention to the plight of the oceans. You know, what may happen if we don't start changing something very soon?
Thanks a lot for having me here. It's great to be able to talk about it. And